Back in session. Senator from Newton.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go over the order of business of reports of standing committees.
Seeing no objection, the order of business is reports of standing committees.
Mr. President, I have a report.
Senator from Newton, please send your report forward. Madam Secretary, please read the report.
Mr. President, your Committee on Rules, Joint Rules, Resolutions, and Ethics, to which was referred Senate Bill Number 60, begs leave to report it has examined the same and finds that the bill has been truly perfected and that the printed copies furnished the senators are correct. Also, Mr. President, your Committee on Rules, Joint Rules, Resolutions, and Ethics, to which was referred Senate Bill Number 23, begs leave to report it has examined the same and finds that the bill has been truly perfected and that the printed copies furnished the senators are correct. Respectfully submitted, Senator Richard Chairman.
Senator from Newton.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of Senate bills for perfection. I would ask you recognize the Senator from the 15th on Senate Bill 120.
Order of business is Senate bills for perfection. Senator from the 15th District.
Thank you, Mr. President. I now move that Senate Committee substitute for Senate Bill 120 be brought for the body.
You've heard the motion from the Senator from the 15th. All those in favor of those motions signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator, the bill is before the body.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move for the adoption of the Senate Committee substitute. I have a Senate substitute.
Send the substitute forward.
Bunch of freshmen, Republicans and Democrats. It sits in the governor's office. It sits in the recess of the Senate.
Senator, has the substitute been distributed?
It has been distributed. I ask for a waiver of the reading.
Okay. Seeing no objection, a waiver of the reading shall be granted.
Thank you, Mr. President. For the benefit of the body, this is the economic development / tax credit reform bill that is being presented to this chamber for its consideration to move us forward as a state in a number of different ways. And I'd like to start out by explaining the process, what's in the bill, and the rationale for what is in the bill. As most people in this chamber are aware, we've struggled over the last couple years as to how to deal with the over 60 particular tax credit programs that are currently in our portfolio, which ones make sense, which ones don't make sense, which ones should be capped, which ones caps should be lowered, which ones should be sunsetted. And we've gone through this exercise on that front over the last couple years. The Senate has had a position, the House has had a position, we've been unable to come to a resolution to this point. There's also a number of ideas that many people believe can reposition our state and allow us to grow. And I think it's important for us to have a conversation about growth and how this state moves forward and how it is positioned among the several states. As many of us have talked about this year, we started out moving forward, proving we could move forward on a piece of legislation on the amateur sports tax credit, which had gone through the process over a four-year period and had been more finely wrought than originally filed, and that has been sent over to the House. The second step in that process is for us to come together to move forward on an economic development / tax credit bill that incorporates a couple ideas as what's in the Senate substitute that prints on data centers and freight forwarder that have been discussed, widely discussed. And also to incorporate tax credit reform into this conversation. The step after that, in my view, as we move forward, is for us to be able to clear the deck, sort of have a cleansing of some of the things that have been out there over a couple of years, so we can move on and start to move forward on, if there are process reforms that need to move forward, to move those out. If there are other ideas, to move those out. Let people weigh in. Go through the process, vote on this legislation, move the state forward, or in some cases disagree, and not let those ideas move forward. So what is in this bill as we are in step two of this three-step. I want to start, I saw the movie Lincoln this weekend before the Oscars. It was late. The first time I went to go see it, it was sold out. And luckily, we bought our tickets in advance this go-around before I took my wife out to dinner. We wanted to see it before the Oscars. And I was inspired a little bit. I'm not the storyteller that Honest Abe was, but to me, to put the first part of this bill as we talk about air commerce and exports, to put this in a little bit of context, and I shared this with the committee, a gentleman that was born 200 years ago, John Hardiman Walker. I had never heard of John Walker, but John Walker, not the Johnny Walker that Mr. President seems to be referring to, but John Walker, was born in Kentucky, and in the early 1800s moved to the southeast part of our great state. A year after he moved to our state, you had the New Madrid earthquake. And as many people left Missouri, particularly the southeast portion of the state, as he became known as the Czar of the Valley, his cattle operation grew. He bought up a lot of property, a lot of land. And so in 1818, when Missouri began its process of moving and petitioning the federal government for statehood status, Mr. Walker realized that his property was going to be in a different state. It was going to be in Arkansas and not in Missouri. Now, there's a lot of reasons to not want to be in Arkansas. But one of the reasons why Mr. Walker wanted to be in the state of Missouri is he understood something that has moved cities, has moved civilizations forward since the beginning of civilization. If you are near, if you are close to where goods are freely traded, prosperity follows. And so Mr. Walker understood that being in the great state of Missouri meant he was going to be in a state with the convergence of the Missouri and the Mississippi River, the city that ultimately became St. Louis and the fourth largest city in the country 100 years ago. The reason why we have the boot heel is because Mr. Walker petitioned the federal government and state leaders to be included in our state. So if you ever wonder why the boot heel is the way the boot heel is, and the great senators that represent that area over here in the General Assembly, Mr. Walker realized that Missouri was going to be, there's a reason why Missouri was the first state that became a state after the Louisiana Purchase and west of the Mississippi, is because of the great opportunity we have given our location and things that we can't take credit for. The Mississippi River was the major trade artery in the 1800s. It was the first superhighway. The steamboat traffic that traveled up and down that river, sending goods from St. Louis to New Orleans, again, made St. Louis the fourth largest city in the country. But the next mode of transportation that collapsed what is referred to as the elastic mile, a mile will always be a mile, but how quickly you can travel that mile changes things. It collapses time and space, and generates enormous wealth. St. Louis, and I talked about this when we dealt with this a couple years ago, missed the boat. The steamboat interest prevented Missouri or St. Louis from building that Eads Bridge in time to be the place where the Transcontinental Railroad spread west. If you notice one of our paintings up here, Senator Benton, the one of the murals, he's advocating at that time that St. Louis be that place. The rail hub went to Chicago. That bridge wasn't built in time, and the rest is history. There are some things that aren't plaques on a wall or recognition of something that happened a few years ago. Some things last forever. The reason why the Sears Tower is in Chicago is because Sears and Roebuck was shipping goods all across this country, and to be close to the rail hub is where they wanted their business to be located. Why is this relevant? Well, you're either a port city or you're not. You're either a river city at the time, a hub, or you're not. You're either on the interstate or you're not. If you were on Route 66 and the new interstate was coming by, whether or not you had an exit ramp on that interstate was life or death to your business. And there's some folks in this chamber who have worked very hard in their own capacity to make sure that some of those things are close to where they have their business because they understand what it means to be at the intersection of trade and where those routes run. And those routes are not always permanent. And what we see now is air cargo represents 40% of the value of all of the goods that are traded in the world. Not volume, but value. From 1975 to 2005, global GDP rose 154%. World trade grew 355%, and air cargo grew 1,400%. In this new economy, things are moving quicker, faster. Components are being shipped all around the world as just-in-time goods. And, oh, by the way, those include a lot of agricultural products. So for Missouri to have a place in global trade is absolutely critical. And for us to have a place where goods are sent around the world is something that I feel very strongly about, and I know a lot of people in this chamber do too. So we have in this legislation the freight forwarder credit that allows and will reduce transportation costs for those Missouri businesses that are finding new markets for their products. That Lambert, which has an underutilized runway and a lot of opportunity that surrounds it. I grew up around that place, and when it was a passenger hub, it was a very different place than it is now. It's no longer a passenger hub. Air cargo represents about 1.5% of the revenue of that airport. If you compare that to cities like Indianapolis at 40%, we have a place. We can get to places quicker than Chicago can, and they're congested. That is our opportunity. The second piece that's in this bill is the data center legislation, and the senator from Polk has worked very, very hard on this, along with the senator from Christian and the senator from Newton in the past. And I want to honor his hard work, and if there are questions about that, I'd certainly be willing to answer them, but he's he's the guy right now on data centers, and I'm proud to have worked with him, because I think if you look at how Missouri is positioned, again, it is a natural segue for us because of our locational advantage. It is not a stretch, and that's why the data center opportunity is a real one for our state. Those are the two new programs. The freight forwarder piece is capped at $7.5 million a year and sunsetted. The data center, because of the way it's structured, does not have a fiscal note. Those are the two programs that are in this bill currently. Now let's talk about reform. The two big ones that are in this bill are historic preservation and low-income tax credit. We've struggled to come to a resolution with our partners across the hallway. And in light of that, I thought it was important to keep in context sort of where we've been and provide us the best opportunity to get to a solution this year. Low income is currently capped at about $190 million because it follows the federal 9%. The Tax Credit Review Commission recommend its utilization, average utilization is around $150 million. The Tax Credit Review Commission has recommended $130 million this year. This bill places it at $110 million. In my view, on the lower end, I understand that there are some people that want lower caps, there are some people that want higher caps, but this is what I felt was a reasonable position to keep our partners at the table to ultimately get to, like I said, a resolution. Stacking between the 9% low income and historic is prohibited. It also reduces the carry-forward provision from 3 years to 2 years, and also reduces the carry-back provision on the low-income piece. On historic, when I was elected in 2008, now historic it's done a lot for a lot of areas in the state, and I don't think we're talking about eliminating it here, despite some of the hysteria that you hear. I think people recognize it's an important program. But when I was elected in 2008, my first session in 2009, it was an uncapped program, infinity, forever. It was through the hard work of a lot of people, including the senator from Grundy. It was capped at $140 million. The Tax Credit Review Commission has recommended $90 million. The bill that came out of here in special session had it at $90 million. This bill has it at $75 million, which I believe is on the lower end of the track of where we've been headed. I understand some people want it lower, but I thought that was well within reason of trying to get something done here. Brownfield credit is uncapped currently, is capped at 30, unless there's a reauthorization of land assemblage. This mirrors the 2008. There's nothing in here about land assemblage, but if it does, if it is reauthorized, there's a provision here that mirrors the 2008 bill that came out of the Senate. Again, consistent with the Senate position. Neighborhood preservation is eliminated. The self-employment health insurance tax credit, Senator Loudoun's baby a few years ago, is eliminated, bringing the overall savings from this legislation to about $830 million as it's scored. That doesn't include other programs that are being sunsetted. So, in my view, I think it's important for us to come together and have a Senate position to continue this process, to send something over to the Missouri House of Representatives, and ultimately get to a place where, again, we have resolution on these very, very important issues. And I know that this is something we've talked a lot about over the years. Mr. President, I would move for the adoption of the Senate substitute, and I would also, I don't know if he's here, like to inquire the senator from Lewis. Is he here?
The senator from the 15th has moved for the adoption of Senate substitute to Senate committee substitute to Senate Bill 120. Sergeant of Arms, would you summons the senator from Lewis for an inquiry? Senator, our Sergeant of Arms has already located the Senator from Lewis, who is entering the chamber as we speak. Senator from Lewis, do you yield to an inquiry from the Senator from the 15th?
I do.
He does. Proceed.
Thank you. I'll leave this. I'll make this brief. I'm not trying to filibuster my own bill. I just wanted to make this is an important enough conversation. I wanted to give it context. And you, I know you are the chairman of the Agriculture Committee, and have been a big supporter of growing our exports and having those exports be part of what we do here in our state. And I just wanted to ask you how you feel about those opportunities that we have and how important the air cargo piece is to this multimodal thing we're trying to establish here.
You know, agriculture, it's a global, agriculture isn't a global economy. And I think that's one thing the United States does very well is raise agricultural products. And we are probably one of the very few industries over the recent years that actually have a net export.
Right.
So, yes, if we can export more products, it's just better for the United States. I was in the office going over your floor substitute and making some highlights, but and I hadn't gotten all the way through the floor substitute here. But, yeah, very agriculture exports is very important, and I have known a gentleman for a number of years that is in the agricultural export business.
That Tony Clayton?
That is Tony Clayton.
I thought his testimony over the years has probably been some of the best testimony we've heard, because there's a lot of things I wasn't aware of that fly. And things that currently...
No, pigs fly.
Pigs fly, I know. And people around the world eat different parts of the hog than we eat. And that need for fresh, protein-rich food is growing. 95% of the world's consumers are outside of the United States.
That's true. It's whole animals. It's animal products. And what the United States and even Missouri is well known for is some of our genetic...
Right.
You know, the benefits that we have with our good genetics that we have here in Missouri of our livestock. Right now, do you know where Tony has to go to export?
Chicago, I think.
All of his?
And that's about twice the distance that it ought to be for him when you have zero international cargo flights that have exports. You know, it presents a challenge for Missouri businesses, not to mention... You know, what it can mean for the industry that surrounds that kind of thing, the cold chain facilities that store fresh food, the pharmaceuticals that fly. These are things that are emerging that people want immediately, whether it's in hotels in the other part of the world or wherever.
And that is the thing. A lot of the ag exports need to be shipped immediately. And a lot of times the best way to do that's air.
Yeah.
Fresh products, what a lot of other countries want. Air is the only way you can get it there.
And I know that we had a representative from Emerson who they have plants in Lebanon and in Ava, and they talked about, you know, speed to market for them and having a viable option in Missouri.
You know, there's another product that maybe you hadn't thought of, but it is an agricultural product, and that's our floriculture. What we ship overseas, we do a lot of flowers.
Yeah, flowers.
And you talk about fresh; those need to be fresh.
It's amazing as you dive into the cool chain, and it's a physical internet around the world. And when flowers are being shipped from here to other parts of the planet,
Get some in too, but we do export a lot.
Yeah, yeah. Well, listen, I appreciate your support, and I know that agriculture is obviously very important to you, and I think this is, again, an opportunity for us to grow, to get a bigger fair share.
Well, thank you. Now, the cap on this is
7.5. Yep.
Yeah, that's what I was looking at.
Okay. Well, the total is 60 over 8 years, absolutely, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. President. I know that we've got a lot of work to do, and I think we get on with it. So with that, I would be happy to answer any questions.
We are on the adoption of the Senate Committee substitute for Senate Bill number 120. Does any senator desire to be heard? Senator from Buchanan County, for what purpose do you rise?
To inquire of the senator from the 15th.
Senator from the 15th, do you yield to an inquiry? Does proceed.
Senator, could you just go ahead and explain to me a few points about this bill? Because I'm just not an expert on these tax credits, and
okay. So
I'm going to need some explanation.
Okay.
First of all, I just got your Senate substitute. It was still hot. This is lying on my desk, warm.
Hot off the presses.
It had temperature. It had a fever. And so I'm trying to figure out exactly, because I've been struggling to follow this process along. And that was interesting. Anyway, the first thing that my mind goes to, of course, is the China hub piece, the freight forwarders. And I think that I saw in here that this bill would only apply to St. Louis Airport.
That's right.
Okay. You know how I feel about that, because I've told you multiple
times. I think you had an amendment about that couple years ago that
I remember when Senator Mayer
was defeated.
He sat right over there, and what was really interesting was that I had this call in to Pete Fullerton.
You had what? I'm sorry.
I had this telephone call.
Okay.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
We could ask the president for a little order, but
would you keep your conversations into the side gallery so we can listen to the senator's debate on this very important issue?
Isn't that awesome?
It is nice.
The
it's real power, isn't it?
Just a few words. Right. But anyway, the way this happened was that I had this call into Pete Fullerton, who's the head, who was at that time the head of the economic development for Platte County, mm-hmm. in which Kansas City International Airport is located, which is, by the way, about 250, 300 miles closer to Shanghai than Lambert is, but I mean, that's neither here nor there.
But right, but not closer to larger population centers, which is the point, in that you connect quick, you get to more places in 12 hours by truck, which is obviously the whole point. And that's why when we talk about opportunities that exist, what I don't want to see happen is a cannibalization of it, so that nobody succeeds. I'll give you a good example. The Ford bill in 2010. I represent Fenton, the Chrysler plant. Now, I recognize that for Kansas City at that time, it was a really important piece of legislation to keep those jobs at Clay Como. Now, I could have been taking a different perspective and said, thou shall not pass unless Chrysler gets... But I think... If you have a view of the whole state here, you have to recognize what opportunities are real. I don't think the folks in Kansas City, in fact, they testified to that effect, they view this as really a St. Louis opportunity. And as far as the airport goes, but as far as the opportunity for Missouri businesses to decrease those transportation costs, I think that can help everybody too.
Well, anyway.
And I know you have a different point of view. You think that that the KCI ought to be included. I get that. I think that not everyone from your region probably shares that view, but I know that you do, and I respect that.
Okay. Well, anyway, I was telling you the story about Senator Mayer, and he was inquiring me, and I had called Pete Fullerton, who was the head of the economic development for Platte County, and I was waiting for him to call me back. And Senator Mayer inquired of me, and I used to sit up there in the right-hand corner, and he said, so does your economic development guy in Platte County, has he contacted you? Well, I had contacted him, so I had to truthfully say, well, no. And immediately he goes, well, obviously there's nobody in Platte County that wants that. And there was nothing I can do. And as I was being inquired of him, my phone was buzzing in my pocket. And I didn't have the presence of mind to, like, really quickly be able to look at it. You know, it was Pete Fullerton calling me to tell me that they want in.
In Platte County.
Yeah.
But the airport folks do not.
Well, but do we do what the airport folks want, or do we do County wants?
I'm just giving a full context.
I'll freely admit that. And at the time, Senator Sylvester Sly James, Anyway, he said,
Did you have a poem about him one time?
Did you have a poem? Maybe I'll read that in the course of this.
It was hilarious at the time, but you know.
Actually, that poem is actually on the internet available. Although the Kansas City Star was not very pleasant about, you know, when they reviewed my poem, but. Anyway, the thing is that Mayor James said that it's important for them to get this data centers, and so they just weren't focusing on that. He said, it'd be nice, but we're really just focusing our efforts, i.e. Mr. Bill Gamble and his group, on the data center piece. So anyway, you do know that the Platte County commissioners came and talked to you.
One
of them did.
Yeah.
Well, he's the presiding.
He's the big guy, huh? Yeah. He did mention that to me. That's right.
And he is a former state representative, and he's a war hero because he carries a bullet in his lung.
Duly noted.
He actually got shot while he was out over there in Iraq. You know that.
I appreciate his service. Yep.
So if he says it, I mean, you have to take it seriously.
Of course I do.
And as you know, when my Platte County head commissioner says they want to be in on this potential tax credit, that I'm the senator that represents Kansas City International Airport.
Said you didn't care what the airport said, and that's in your district. So you're just picking which ones you like, right? Which advice you like to take?
No. I want all airports.
I get it. Listen, I understand.
Okay.
It's not like I did not expect for you to want KCI in, and I've tried to articulate the reasons why. Is probably too far west, and most of the folks in Kansas City don't even really want it. It's not anything they're focused on. But I understand that you have a different point of view.
Well, I want to also tell you a little bit more. I heard that when the China Hub Commission met, I don't know if this is true or not, so you please tell me, that they thought that it should be available to all the airports. Is that correct?
I don't know if that's true or not.
Can we get those minutes to find out? Are they available publicly?
If it's a public entity, you're certainly available to sunshine it. But as you mentioned,
are you representing to me that the China Hub Commission did not want to include all of the...
I think it was discussed. Whether or not that was a formal position. And by the way, it's referred to as the International Cargo.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So I just want to, you know, just in case you weren't aware of that.
International Cargo Commission. Well, when I go to Google it to find out, then that's the one I want to look up.
Yeah, that might help you in your search.
The thing is that there are a lot of people that would want that tax credit to be available all over the state. And one of the things that I've noticed is I serve on the MTC board. Are you familiar with
the
Missouri Technology Corporation?
Yep.
That's one of those things that you suddenly find out you're on. And what happened with me was one day I got this letter that says, hey, you're on there. And I said, when did that happen? It was like in May.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it turned out that they had published in the journal in like January that I was put on that and like four or five other boards. And so actually it was Jason Hall. You remember Jason Hall?
Yes, I do.
Well, he wrote me this letter and he said, so you're on this board. Well, boom, I'm on this board. And so I tried to dive into this and learned as much as I could about it. And most recently, we had a board meeting across the way in the Truman Building. And they have this big notebook of all of the projects that the MTC board is considering to fund. And so there were, I think, 9, or maybe 10. I think there were 10 projects, 9 of which were for companies in St. Louis.
Hmm.
And, you know, that had happened previously. Every meeting where I go, this board considers all these projects, and I have to say, between 75% and all of them, somewhere in there, they're for St. Louis projects. And I think there are reasons for that. You know, that's where the board started. That's where a lot of these kind of incubator things happen and so on. And I bring that up and I say, really, we need to kind of spread it around a little bit and kind of help, you know.
Right. And I think what's important is that we move, you know, the typical thing that happens around here is we try to pit people against one another.
I think it's
time that we try to move away from that and recognize where the opportunities are, you know. And so I understand, you know, where you're going with that. But I think it's great that you're on that board and you can represent your constituents and try to affect change that way. I just think, you know, when we try to drive wedges with that kind of stuff, I don't think that helps our state. And I think for many, that's one of the main reasons why I think we lag behind. We've got to figure out a way, urban, rural, suburban, to kind of come together, recognize what our opportunities are. One of those big opportunities, in my view, and we'll have this bill heard, is to lower our tax rate for everybody. I think that would expand the economy. I also think reducing our liability on some tax credits is a smart thing to do. I also think figuring out where our opportunities are to have a new economy emerge is something that we ought to do. But we ought to do it together because we could all find examples of where road money goes to or school money goes to, where we could divide people. But I think for us in this context, as we consider an economic development bill, what's our path forward? What are our strengths, and how can we move it forward together?
So doesn't it seem to you that's consistent with what you just said of bringing people together and not dividing them, that like including all of the airports in the state would be a good thing?
Well, I think you have to be realistic. First of all, to have 777s land with international cargo, I mean, you can't. You're confined to basically 2 airports, okay? And if you want to have, instead of cannibalizing something that can be great, I want it to work. And that's the rationale. And if you look at the studies, I'm sure you've had an opportunity to review a lot of the studies that support this idea. But one of the main reasons is Chicago is congested. And if you're trying to get within the Mississippi River Valley area to get to the population centers, which are east of St. Louis, you can get to more of those places quicker in a 12-hour period than you can from Kansas City, which is why locationally it makes more sense. So we're just trying to recognize geographically kind of where we're at.
Do you think that any time any of the cargo that goes to China might actually be like beef?
Those are federal issues. So beef, I'm not aware of that restriction being lifted at this point. But pork, there are a lot.
But it could someday be beef, right?
I'm sure as you followed this,
Could it someday be beef? I mean, people like beef.
Yeah, it could be. Absolutely.
You know, beef is what's for dinner.
And in other countries it can be. Yeah, beef, what for dinner. And there's also live animals that are shipped.
If I were to ask you, where's more beef? Where's the beef? Would you say St. Louis, Kansas City? Where would you say?
Well, I know that I think it's something like 40 or 60%, it's been a while since, of all the pork, actually, that is produced in the country comes from Illinois, Missouri, and Iowa.
You know, you know what the like third biggest employer in St. Joe is behind the school district and the hospital?
Missouri Western?
No, it's not. That's a good guess, though.
Thanks.
It's Triumph Foods.
Great. I'm sure they would love to reduce their shipping costs.
We probably sending that there to Chicago. Employ more.
And I also want to discuss, too, you know, the real opportunities that the Hub Commission is pursuing right now, and that Ed Monser, who was in, I think, had talked to a lot of people yesterday. They're really, I mean, Asia is always an opportunity, but right now it's European carriers and Brazilian carriers. And so, you know, this thing probably ramps up slowly, but in my view, it's creating an air connection to the rest of the world from our state that we don't have. And that has played itself out over history, whether it was ports or highways. But if you accept the fact that 40% of all the world trade right now flies, and we're not even on the map, I just think it's a place. I'd like to have a place in global trade.
Hey, did you know that I'm a pilot?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I actually have an instrument rating, although I haven't flown for a while. You'd be surprised at the different people around this building who do fly.
Yeah, I'm aware of some. It's not
a pilot, by the way.
I am not.
Well, one of the things that I know from being a pilot is that not every airport can handle a 777.
Right.
They have to meet certain criteria. In fact, the FAA is not going to allow a 777 to land on an airport unless it meets those criteria, unless it's an emergency.
Right.
In which case, those babies can land wherever they want.
And dual takeoff and landing, and I mean, there's a lot of criteria that the FAA.
Right.
I mean, one of the opportunities is you have a underutilized runway right now that was built at exactly the wrong time at Lambert. And one of the things I think that's also important to note is if you talk to people, and not just in St. Louis, but in Missouri, especially people that travel who are from other parts that fly out of St. Louis. One of the things, and this is a broader discussion about the airport, okay, that is a very important infrastructure asset, is the front door to our state, to the region, okay? But the loss of direct connections is a big deal. And so as companies make strategic, you know, St. Louis used to have 40 of the top 100 companies headquartered in St. Louis after World War II. That's not the case. You have some great success. Express Scripts is a Fortune 14 company now, but that's all changed. In Kansas City, you know, We're doing a lot of, we've lost half of the Congress people that we had 60 years ago. And I think a lot of that is, in the modern world, if you can't connect, and it's bigger than just shipping goods, if you can't connect to other places, you have a long-term problem. And so this is a piece, it's not the whole solution. But those 777s, the landed weight, that's how airports derive revenue, can help lower landing fees for passenger routes. So it's, again, it's
so
not
that's that's a big deal for you. You know that we lost our American hub.
Yeah.
And did you know that at
KCI?
And so we have some extra space there and kind of a decreased traffic. And I think all of our runways are probably a little bit underutilized. We could sure handle, you know, that some 777s landing there. You know, if St. Louis is the gateway to the state, then St. Joe must be truly the back door because we were the start of the Oregon Trail, you know, the jumping off point there.
And missed the boat on the railroad, right? St. Joe at the time was bigger than KC, but the railroad went through Kansas City, didn't it? Not St. Joe. And again, the rest is history. So the question for us is, are we going to be on the map? And that's what has inspired me in this process.
Well, I guess being that there's only two airports that currently have the capability of handling 777s, if we were to say that any airport could qualify for that tax credit, then the effect of it would be that the law would say that all airports, but it would just really only extend it to Kansas City International and Lambert, wouldn't it?
Practically, probably.
But if, indeed, that there were a smaller plane that say a 777, or sorry, a 727 or something a little smaller that could maybe like land at Boone, why they could participate too.
See, I think it's a misunderstanding of how this works in the sense that Mid-America's tried this. The charter flights, the one flight at a time in and out of one airport, doesn't work. What you need to have is a regularly established route, one flight a week to three flights a week to five flights a week. So it doesn't really work that way. What we need, and that's the purpose of having enough here so that if it does take off, literally and figuratively, we have the opportunity to have a critical mass of three to five flights a week where there's some reliability in the market, and then I think you start to see the attraction of a lot of the business.
But that could theoretically happen, say, in Kansas City, couldn't it?
Theoretically, yes. Theoretically, a lot of things are possible.
Right. And that's what we deal with here is the theoretical.
Well, not exactly, right? We have to balance the theoretical with the practical. That's our job as lawmakers.
If I were to find out that the, what was that called? The international...
Whatever you find...
If I were to find out that the China Hub Commission, whichever it's truly called, actually voted to support all the airports in Missouri, and I showed you that information, would that change your mind about... You're not going to change your mind at all.
No, I want to recognize the opportunities where they are, and I don't, just like you don't, take your orders from the airport that said they don't want any piece of it in Kansas City. I have my own point of view on this, too.
They don't want any piece of it in Kansas City either, is what you're saying. Yeah, that's kind of what I thought you were going to say. You know that I was born in St. Louis. Did you know that?
I did know that.
And I grew up there, and we moved to St. Joseph when I was 9 years old. And so I have some roots there.
I'm glad.
Some
glad.
Family. And I went to medical school in St. Louis. To St. Louis University Medical School.
Okay, I actually did not know that.
Yeah.
And I went to law school at St. Louis University.
So if you take that 9 years plus that 4 years, I've spent 13 years of my life there. I'm 56, so I don't know what percentage that works out to be. But, yeah, probably
good pretty, portion, right? Good
portion. Probably a pretty reasonable portion, 24% maybe. So I've really spent quite a bit of time in St. Louis. And I don't want to, like, hurt St. Louis. But I've spent the other 75% of my life over on the west side of the state, and I kind of hate to see all of the kind of benefits a lot of the time going to St. Louis.
Is that really what you think happens?
Well, really? I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean,
I think that...
What about that?
What I want to kind of cut through is, you know, the sound bites and the rhetoric and try to recognize where the real opportunities are.
Well, these other tax credits... Like, for example, the data storage center facilities tax credit.
Right.
St. Louis could participate in that, couldn't they?
Sure. I think that's one that has been talked about a lot in Kansas City, and particularly in rural Missouri. Those are a lot of opportunities. And so that's sort of where that kind of came in. And then
they don't limit it to Kansas City or rural Missouri.
I will tell you that the real focus of Kansas City is the angel investor credit.
How much of the tax credits do you have going for the freight forwarders in this bill?
$7.5 million a year.
How much for the data centers?
You know, I would ask you to honestly refer to the center from Polk on the data center stuff. But the truth is that because it has a net fiscal benefit and it requires a certain number of initial investment in jobs. That could vary widely between how much basically sales tax and utility taxes are abated in the process.
There's no limit on the number of tax credits?
If it doesn't have a net negative benefit to the state.
I didn't realize that. So basically what you're telling me is that this bill does not contain a cap on the number of tax credits. I just want to know.
Well, I know that's the purpose of your inquiry, right? You're looking for answers, and I'm trying to provide them for you.
I'm just asking.
Yeah.
What?
be a credit that's based on, so the requirements are that you've got to create, you have initial investment of $37 million, you have 150% of the average county wage, and 30 new jobs. And at that point, if you qualify, you have the taxes that you would pay for the equipment, the sales tax you would pay for the equipment, abated. So it's structured a little bit differently, but because of the requirement that it has a net fiscal benefit to the state, the fiscal note is zero, whether it's utilized one time or 50 times.
Okay, well, I wasn't asking about the fiscal note. I was asking if there's a cap in the bill.
And I just told you no.
And so there is no cap.
Correct.
Well, then what would be an estimated number of tax credits that would go for any one data center project?
I'm sorry?
Well, take the typical data center project that you envision in this bill and tell me about how much in tax credits you would expect to be awarded.
It's not a tax credit.
It's not a tax credit at all?
The tax abatement from taxes. It's a rebate on sales taxes that are utilized for the data center.
So we're not talking about any tax credits for Missouri. We're just talking about rebating sales tax and property tax.
Or the entity that would move into the state and make that investment, correct.
So how much in sales tax and property tax would you estimate?
Exceed the net fiscal benefit, so it could vary.
So could it be $10
million? I don't understand your question.
Oh, I'm just trying to figure out how much the company would benefit in tax.
It depends on the investment and the jobs that are being created. So
it could be that the project,
let's say they made a $300 million investment, that benefit is going to vary versus somebody making a $40 million investment, because it's based on the net benefit to the state, which is the amount that they're being rebated.
How many potential data center investment projects are out there?
If they meet the qualifications, there's no specific number.
Well, I know, but do you have some idea, like Google?
Can I listen, Senator, these are very good questions. I am not the Oracle at Delphi. I don't know how many companies may come here if we enact this or may not. It could be zero, it could be 50, it could be 100, it could be 25, it could be 26.
I got to write that comment down.
The Oracle at Delphi?
You're not.
I am not.
Oracle. I'm writing this down because it's so good. Of Delphi. Okay, now, I'm going to ask you this next question. How many potential freight forwarders are out there?
There's any number of freight forwarders. Dozens.
Could there be three?
There are more than three.
Could there be five?
Yep.
Are
you saying the max, or are you saying that could qualify?
Well, yeah. How many freight forwarders?
My answer, again, as not being the Oracle at Delphi, I don't know. There could be two that take advantage.
Could there be one in the St. Louis region and one in the Kansas City region?
Yes.
Then
freight forwarders are located. What freight forwarders do, Senator, is they are the commercial travel agents. So if I have goods in the Quad Cities and I want to get them to London, I hire a freight forwarder and I say, I want to get my goods there by next Tuesday. You're in charge of figuring out the best and most efficient way to do it. And what we're trying to do with this is to divert what would normally go to Chicago because of the number of flights and divert them to Missouri.
So if Triumph Food has a whole bunch of processed pork and it needs to go to Shanghai, then the closest airport might be KCI from St. Joe and to Shanghai. So if there's more than two, it seems to me that we ought to at least allow for the possibility to occur. Doesn't that seem reasonable?
That is your position.
But it's not your position, and I'm working on you.
I understand.
I mean, you can see that I am. Okay. Low-income housing tax credits. What does the bill do with regard to that?
What now?
Tell me what the bill does for low-income housing
tax. Okay. So right now, it is a credit that follows the federal 9% credit. Okay, so right now you theoretically could have authorizations in each year of up to $190 million. Okay, and so what we're saying is we're going to establish a cap on the historic preservation tax credit of $110 million, 100 for the 9%.
No, not historic preservation.
I'm sorry.
Low income housing.
100 on the 9%, 10 million on the 4%. So we have a cap, and let me pull out what else we're doing. There's also a provision that allows the carry forward.
Yeah, the carry forward.
Let me grab that real quick.
Is reduced from 3 years to 2 years.
So, reduces the carry forward provision from 10 years to 2 years. And this is consistent with some of the ideas that have been out there on reform, which is to shorten the time by which a taxpayer that might receive the benefit of that, instead of spreading that out over 10 years, to reduce that period of time that they can apply it to reduce their tax liability, so that we have a better sense in our budgeting process what we're dealing with each year. So it reduces it from 10 to 2, and the carry back is reduced from 3 to 2. So a taxpayer could carry it back on their taxes, carry it forward on their taxes. We're shrinking that time. And we're also prohibiting the stacking of the 9% low-income tax credit with historic.
Could you explain to me, because I never really did understand this, 4% and 9%?
I guess the best way to describe it is the 4% are more sort of the non-profits, and the 9% are...
Well, there's two categories of tax credits.
Yeah.
And the 4%, like if you're a not-for-profit entity, then you're going to be applying for the 4%. Sure. Okay, I understand that. Okay, so tell me, how many tax credits were authorized in the most recent fiscal year?
Let me grab that. So low-income housing in fiscal year 12, the authorization was $171,894,000. So call it $172 million in FY12. Issued $165 million and redeemed $165 million. So that's why I say, and I've talked to some members, some people want the caps lower, right? We're at 110, but you just heard those numbers. And I think if we can get to a place where we're capping at close to those numbers, we will have made significant progress.
So you'd be going from, really, the effectiveness of this would be going from 165 to 110.
Right.
Okay. Now,
based on, the utilization, right?
Do you have any data available to you on where these tax credits, where they're concentrated over the state?
The low income is utilized, everywhere. I couldn't tell you exactly.
There are some in St. Joe. In fact, yeah. Some of them are really, really abused. Like, we have this one kind of low-income housing area, and the average unit, they spent like $320,000 remodeling it. Outrageous. And not only that, but they would put in like marble countertops and stuff. And I've heard that what happens is, and I don't know if this is true, I'm just asking you, that the developers would put in like these marble countertops, and as soon as the number of years passed such that the tax credit deal was done, they'd yank out all the marble countertops and put in Formica and use the marble ones, in other upscale places. Yeah,
I can't speak to that.
Have you ever heard of anything like that?
Not firsthand.
Have you even heard it said that happens, that kind of thing happens?
Maybe from another senator, yeah. Like, and I don't doubt maybe
like
that.
Another senator who used to sit like right there.
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if you're borrowing a story.
No.
I don't doubt that could very well happen. I just don't know. I think that I and many people in this chamber have been consistent with trying to bring these caps down. And I think what I'd like to get to is a place where, we're not giving so many speeches about how bad, or giving the parade of terribles, but that we're actually accomplishing something on it. And that's why I've got this.
Would you be willing to let the bill have a lower number on that?
I've sort of put forth what I think gives us the best path, but the Senate is a process, so I understand.
And then, and you'd say the same thing about like putting Kansas City Airport or in the freight reporting thing?
You're a senator, you can offer an amendment.
I can offer that amendment. Okay, I appreciate that.
Now I'll speak against it, but you can offer your amendment.
I've had this experience of when the sponsoring senator of the bill speaks against my amendment, oftentimes it just dies for no apparent good reason.
Well, but that doesn't... Like, you're a great senator. That is
recently.
No personal reflection. It's just,
And even when the sponsoring senator of the bill actually approved my amendment in advance, it still died. But that's neither here nor there. Okay, Moving on to the neighborhood preservation tax credits.
Yep.
Now, right now, I guess there's a $16 million cap.
Yep.
But don't we authorize a lot more tax credits than that this is historic preservation?
No, this is neighborhood preservation. So it's a separate program that does kind of what historic does. I mean, it provides a credit for rehabbing, basically. And so as I look at the real estate portfolio, I think we're a little heavy on real estate, and that's why I like to recalibrate with some savings to some high growth opportunities that focus on trade and information and technology. That's the theme of this. But neighborhood preservation is different than historic.
I guess, what percentage of those are in the east side of the state or in the St. Louis area?
I don't know.
What percentage of the low-income housing tax credits are in the St. Louis area?
I couldn't tell you. I think that the neighborhood, I would say that the low income is, I would, there's a greater utilization other places probably than you would see in some of the other ones. But I don't know, I don't have the numbers, I'm not sure.
Okay, next I guess is the historic preservation.
Mm-hmm.
So, how many tax? What would be the cap? The proposed cap in your bill for that?
$75 million.
And how much is being authorized, issued, redeemed now?
The 5-year average on historic on authorization is 132.5. The 5-year average on issued is 122, and the 5-year average on redeemed is 135. The cap is 140.
The cap is 140.
Right.
So that one's used a lot.
Yeah.
Okay. And you wouldn't have any data on what percentage of them? Yeah.
No.
Okay. Didn't think so. So really it's going from 135 to 75, essentially, in reality.
Yeah, where we're at now. But I do think what's important to note, and I know you would appreciate this, is where we're at now doesn't mean that's where we're going to be, because when the economy improves, you may see a higher utilization, or utilization could continue to go down. I don't know. But the point is for us to establish, I think, a place where we have some certainty on where that cap is on a new lower cap.
And, you know, every year, all those buildings out there get more and more historic.
That's right, they do.
When, you know, they it seems like they age by like a year every 365 days.
They age a year every year. I think that's about right.
They
sounds
do.
Like some Yogi Berra might say.
Okay. So now that brings us to brownfield remediation tax credits. And this one has really had a lot of press, I guess.
Yep.
But this is what they talk about when they talk about the McKee tax credits, right? That's the one that, this is that one?
No.
No?
That would be the land assemblage tax
credit. Land assemblage. Is that in this bill?
It is not in this bill. Nope.
Oh, okay, it's not in the bill at all.
Not in the bill. Neither is the renters for much to the. It's amazing the rumor mill around here. I think it's funny when they find out a bill's going on the floor. The renters portion of the circuit breaker is not in this bill either.
Okay, I guess it was supposed to be in there, wasn't it? I mean,
that was never my intention.
Version? Okay. Okay, so what is the current cap on the brownfield
one? It is uncapped.
And this would put a cap.
Yep.
And what's the current authorized, issued?
The numbers recently are lower. The 5-year average is 13 on issued, on 16.5 on authorized was the first one, second one 16.5, redeemed 20. this was not one of the big two that we were sort of focusing on, historic and low income, but there was in Senator from Nottoway's bill, there was a reference to brownfields. So in good faith, I put in the cap on brownfields that we had in the special session bill. So this would mirror the special session bill, the cap on brownfields, except that bill had it capped at $40 million, okay? If land assemblage was reauthorized, $10 million would be carved out for that. If it wasn't reauthorized, you still had a cap of 40, okay? This says it's 30. If that is not reauthorized, it's 30. So you actually have a lower cap than where you were in 2011, which was the last time the Senate really took a position on brownfields.
Okay. Okay, so my question then is, does this bill contain anything about angel investors?
It does not.
Why not? Why did you choose not to?
I tried to focus on the couple of things. I tried to be consistent with this, a couple of things that have been out there the last couple of years, and I tried to keep it, you know, the new authorizations under 10 million per year, and then, you know, to provide the savings. I know that that's important to a lot of folks, particularly in Kansas City. So, but I was trying to...
I know you just said the magic words that... That is kind of important to the folks in Kansas City.
Right.
You know that I'm from Kansas City. I actually have a chunk of Kansas City in my district, the actual city of Kansas City.
Yep. Yeah,
you know what? By the way, do you know what the largest city in Missouri is?
The largest city would probably be Kansas City.
No, it's not. It's Wildwood. Not.
It's what?
Wildwood.
Wildwood?
That's right. Geographically, area-wise.
Oh, area. I thought you were talking population.
No, I said the largest city.
I represent, along with the senator from Franklin, a portion of Wildwood.
So you actually represent part of the biggest city in Missouri, and I represent part of a big city in Missouri.
Yep.
Which is, you know, Kansas City.
Yep.
Which, by the way, has the international airport in it, which, by the way, is closer to Shanghai, but anyway. So... You didn't put the angel investor tax credit in there.
Correct.
What about Mosaira?
It is not in here.
Not in there. How come?
There's been less discussion about Mosaira. I don't know if the House moves on to Mosaira. There's a lot more variables.
Just you thought it might have too much political baggage to make it through the process?
I suppose that's part of it, yeah. I mean, that's part of it. I voted for it.
I did, too.
So, but, you know, you try to manage this stuff, and you try to, as the chairman of a committee, you try to thread a needle, you know, of...
You know, the funny thing about that Mosaira thing is the reason that I voted for the big bill a couple years ago was that it really put in the caps, and I thought it had sunsets, didn't it, on these tax credits?
Yeah.
And so I voted for, I kind of like held my nose and voted for all these tax credits so that in order that we would get reasonable caps and sunsets. I thought sunsets were really important at the time. And so I held my nose and voted for it, but now I know somebody, you know, the senator from Nottoway is really good about this, is reminding me of my inconsistencies, you know.
I thought I'd been good at that too.
And you are.
Right.
You are very good at that. And I'm going to be more diligent, you know, about paying attention to other people's...
Well, you're a conscientious legislator, so...
I try to be. I really do. And that's why I'm asking about Mosaira.
I appreciate
you. You remember what happened there? It was really funny because they put in that little poison pill, Part B, you know, where it said that this will only take effect if this other bill took effect.
Right.
And one of the vagaries, and I think that the freshman senators... should pay attention here and listen, because one of the things that you'll notice about the bills is that the Section A's and the Section B's aren't printed in bold. And you normally, when you pick up the bill, you know, you just naturally look for the bold because that's where the meat of it is.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that little item wasn't in bold, and so I didn't see it. And
well, we talked about that. I remember we talked about that in a caucus. You must
but,
not have been
I don't
caucus.
Know that I was there for that.
Yeah, you might not have been.
I might not have been there. But the point of it is, or maybe I was there and I just wasn't really there.
Right.
You ever had that happen?
Sure. We've all been there.
Yeah. You've all been there? Yeah, or not been there in this case because of, you know, old-timers disease.
Alzheimer's.
I'm 56 years old, by the way. How old?
Did you just call it old-timers?
Old-timers disease, you know, kind of not really being there, even though you're there. But anyway, it wasn't ever discussed on the floor, as I recall, and so just suddenly I found out that this, and this has created a real problem with Mosaira.
Well, I think it's still being litigated, actually.
Which, by the way, as you know, Mosaira sort of dictates a lot of things about MTC, the Missouri Technology Corporation,
right.
Which, coming back to that, as you know, I serve on that, and so... I was kind of hopeful that we could solve a lot of this problem by fixing that little Mosaira problem. Would you be amenable to maybe trying to do that? with an amendment?
I probably don't think this is the right vehicle for that. That's probably
somehow. Or
but another... I'm guessing that you're supporting the incentives like Angel and Mosairo that.
See, the thing about it is, I'm telling you.
I'm just asking you. Are you you're supporting those two?
Well, no. Let me answer the question and tell you that I would be consistent because, as you know, I really don't like it when you point out my inconsistencies.
Right, and I'm
although
trying to...
I am inconsistent probably a lot, but the deal is that just like a couple of years ago when I kind of held my nose in order to get those tax caps, I mean the tax credit caps and the sunsets, if the sunsets were really low enough, in my mind, I could be persuaded to vote for some of these other, you know.
Listen, Senator, I've been supportive of all of the reform measures and worked closely with those. I was in the room when we were hammering all this stuff out. I support sunsets, okay? I think they're really important to do. But I try to.
We're not going to get sunsets.
We're not. So I'm trying to recognize political realities. To try to get to a place where we can get to some resolution. And that may not be the panacea, but, you know, it's the sausage making that we do.
Now, I have another question. Is the fiscal note on this bill?
Yep.
What is that?
Over a 15...
Because, I mean, it's a Senate substitute, so the fiscal note that was in my...
No, there's no substantive change to the programs as far as it relates to a fiscal...
It's around $7 million or up to $7 million or...
What's that?
The effect on general revenue. I mean, the fiscal note of the bill.
Yeah, it would be a savings of $830 million.
A savings of $830. I didn't get that from reading the bill. Well, I know that there are some other senators that have some questions for you, and it looks like it's been about an hour. So,
I appreciate your thoroughness and in your involvement in our great state.
Well, as I listened to the debate, you know, I may develop some other questions, and then maybe later on, I'm sure you'd be willing to answer them.
Absolutely.
You're always willing to answer my questions.
That's why we're here, right?
I really appreciate your willingness to take my inquiry, Senator.
Not a problem.
Thank you so
Thank
much.
You.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Further discussion. Senator from the 24th, what purpose do you rise?
To inquire of the Senator from the 7th.
Senator from the 7th, do you yield to an inquiry?
I am honored to, sir.
He does. Proceed.
So are you off to dinner tonight at 6:30?
Don't have any plans. You inviting me?
No. My understanding was isn't there a dinner tonight with the governor tonight? Or?
Oh, I guess that is tonight, isn't it? I don't know. I guess there is.
You're governor, Senator.
I you know what? Now that I think of it, it is. There is a dinner with the governor tonight. But I've been so enthralled with our work in front of us that I haven't even considered going to eat.
I got a funny story about the freshman dinner and the sophomore dinner. So the freshman dinner...
I'm glad you chose me to share it with.
The freshman dinner, I sat at Governor Nixon's right hand. So it was about the same time of the session, January, February, about now. And we sat down and had dinner together, and pretty neat. But at that point, I really hadn't said a whole lot, kind of like a lot of the freshman senators here. But by the time that session got done, the next session started... At my sophomore dinner, I couldn't have sat farther away from the governor at the sophomore dinner. I was in the kitchen, but I was pretty damn near the kitchen. So I got the invitation for my junior dinner, and I'll be curious to see where I end up. So, you know, I had the...
If you're hanging out in the parking lot, I'll bring you some food.
we'll see. I had noticed a headline concerning you in one of the publications, but I didn't read the article, so it said that you were the most green Democrat or something? Did you see that?
Well, considering I chaired the Renewable Energy Committee for 2 years, it's probably not a stretch.
So it's not an Irish thing. It's an alternative
energy
thing?
It's an energy thing. Right.
Well, you know, I'm curious, is there any legislation on this side of the building that is in that space of pursuing alternative energy? Or, I mean, is there anything? Have you filed anything?
Yeah, we had a hearing today on my Capital Green Bill in the Commerce Committee. I'm filing the net metering bill changes to the Easy Connection Act probably tomorrow. And then I'm always trying to fix the renewable energy standard and the problems it faces.
And so your intermediate and long-term concern is?
Energy security.
Energy security. So you come at it from
a sustainable, clean
But is a climate change part of your calculation?
No.
Okay.
No, it's more of I don't like being dependent on supply lines that are 1,500 miles away from us that are expensive when we have fuel-free ions available to us through the natural environment.
And are you excited by what's going on in the natural gas space?
I think that fracking done properly and safely has opened up a market for the Midwest to find a reliable source that's domestic. I think that's a good thing. I think there are better ways in the end if the technology continues to evolve and the costs continue to fall as they have, that natural gas, like all fossil fuels, you and I have this conversation 50 years from now and we'll be looking back on the ridiculousness that is our carbon footprint. But I think for today's economy and the markets we live in, a cheaper domesticated source of fuel is a good thing.
Well, that's a laudable approach to this. So so what do people say to you? I mean, are you a climate change denier, climate change indifferent to it? Or
no, I think that climate is changing. I fall back. I'm a member of the Truman National Security Project, and one of the multiple meetings that we've had on national security has been about climate, and I've talked to many retired generals and admirals in the United States military who believe that climate change is probably the greatest threat that we face globally to political stability, and that if we don't do something about it as the United States, being the leaders of the free world, then it's really hard for us to demand the rest of the globe to follow if we're not leading.
So, you know, because I would acknowledge that the climate's changing.
Mm-hmm.
Changes all the time, you know.
I think it's becoming more erratic. I think that if we were to look at the trends in weather, we would see some anomalies in the last decade that might be harder. I mean, we didn't have the news services that we do now, so there may have been tsunamis and other types of natural disasters that just didn't come into the purview of the United States.
You think it's a man-made phenomenon?
I think it's really difficult. I think the science would suggest, 98% of the scientists that are credible on this issue would suggest that man does have an impact on climate. To what extent it is the sole impact, I think it's a natural evolution of Earth that man has accelerated as a catalyst. And if we have the ability to change courses and go in a different direction with our own behavior, then we should do that.
Yeah, I mean, because in the scheme of things, man's only been around for a very short period of time.
Well,
there is history.
Depending on spiritual guidance you subscribe to, it's either 5,000 years for some, 10,000. Or it's 100,000 years for other, or it's, you know.
But we know, I mean,
Australopithecus Homo erectus habilis.
How old is the Earth? I know that's a trick question.
Billions of years.
Yeah. I have that disagreement. So in the scheme of things, the man's time on Earth is pretty small, and the climate's been changing throughout history of the Earth.
Yeah, but I think that every time that we've innovated and we've seen technology introduced in our way of life, we don't use whale oil anymore,
right?
Because we knew the whales were going to be extinct if we continued to burn whale oil through light. So the incandescent light bulb was presented. And, you know, I'm sure there were some folks at the time when the incandescent light bulb said, that's ridiculous. No one's going to have a light bulb in every house in America. But yet, here we are. And so I think that, will we have a solar panel on every home in America? I sure hope so.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. I have a real hard... I appreciate your idea that that the United States has to lead on this. But I have a hard time, you know, the 48 contiguous states... It's my understanding they represent about 1.25% of the globe's entire surface. Is that what you understand?
Well, we consume 25% of the Earth's resources, though.
I know, but so your contention is that as we use the Earth's resources, that we are responsible.
I just want to comment that this is one of the differences between the Senate and the House.
Uh-huh.
Because you and I are talking about global climate change on a tax credit bill. We'd have been gaveled down a good 5 minutes ago for not being on topic. So I just want to point that out.
We're getting there.
Yeah, no, I love it. It's great.
No, so it's one of these things where, you know, my party gets chastised for not believe in science. You can say, hey, I think the temperature's changing in a more erratic way. And it's not clear that man is responsible or not responsible, but it's obvious that...
Not the sole responsibility.
Sole responsibility. But I always get stuck on, okay, so even if we're 1% of the Earth's surface, and if what we are doing on that 1% of the Earth's surface, even if it's 10 times or 20 times of what other places are doing, if we changed our behavior, what impact? So you're saying it would have no real impact other than to get other people to change their behavior.
In the course of your career, have you? And I know that you have children of Chinese descent. Have you had a chance yourself to visit China?
That's how you get children from China.
Okay. Well,
you go get them. Yeah.
So I didn't know. I don't know if you noticed the pollution difference. I know when I got into LAX after being in China for 2 weeks, I was kissing the ground and happy to have
the
smog.
Oh, yeah, no. Our first trip...
It was clear air.
Yeah, first trip, we were in Nanjing, and you would think it was like yesterday. It was like there's smoke, and, you know, and it was just a normal day. And
yeah.
We didn't see the sun in that city. That's where my daughter that trains in Blue Springs, that's where she's from. But, you know, so I get stuck on... I guess what you're saying is that if we change our behavior, maybe about everybody else changes their behavior, but if we change our behavior and nobody else changes their behavior, or if the Western European countries change their behavior, but, you're talking
about... That's like saying that Africa has an AIDS epidemic, so we shouldn't work on ours here because they're going to continue to have AIDS or tuberculosis or, you know, pick any type of medical ailment that we've eradicated in our country. Polio. We don't have polio in the United States anymore. But
yeah.
But other countries that didn't work on it did.
AIDS is a disease. There's no debating AIDS is a disease. The impact that man's actions have on the climate is a little less clear, less certain, certainly, than AIDS.
I think if we don't lead, a path will not appear for other countries to follow. Mm-hmm. And if we want them to follow and their behavior changes, then the best way to do that is to be the example for them.
Yeah, I appreciate what you said earlier about, you know, you recognize at what cost, you know. So at what cost do we, you know, I've heard some people say, well, let's just put a big tax on gas, $8 a gallon or something, and then people will change their behavior, you know.
Not my opinion.
And I really appreciate that. I think that's a thoughtful approach for the most green Democrat in the state of Missouri to have.
Well, it is Missouri. You know.
What I'm curious to know is your feelings about this administration's policies concerning incenting, you know, alternative energy companies. So we're on tax.
Are we engaged in a filibuster here? Are we slowing down this bill? Because I'm not understanding how this. I mean, I love it, but I just don't understand
what
how
I'm
related.
Gonna do is that, you know, I look at the Obama administration. Mm-hmm. And I look at they have decided that they want the country's economy to move hard into alternative energy.
Yes, so do I.
And the market was moving there, you know, with a certain amount of subsidy, but this administration has spent an incredible amount of money trying to get that industry...
Jump-started.
So it's a long list. It's Solyndra. It's First Solar.
There's been some failures. There were going to be.
Some of them I said are failures. Some are successes. But
there were some successes too.
But so I mean, how do you feel about that?
Well, I think that how do you feel about subsidizing natural gas and oil and coal? You think that those were appropriate subsidies 100 years ago when we decided that we were going to put public dollars into the wildcatting expeditions?
Well, if I had a chance to vote them off, I would.
Okay. Well, I would have thought again with whale oil in short supply that we needed to have something replace that. And what a subsidy is basically a common resource that is being dedicated towards a goal mm-hmm. for the betterment of the public. And that is where I think for the subsidies that the President of the United States is currently trying to get us to. And again, he has information that you and I are not privy to. He has military leaders that are explaining to him what happens when a tsunami wipes out a stable government in an unstable part of the world, and we have to, as United States military, deal with that geopolitical instability. and what costs, what economic costs are associated with that. If we knew 100%, and again, I'm not making any declarations of fact here, but theoretically, if we knew that Katrina and the hurricane in Haiti and the earthquake in Haiti and the flood of 93, the $20 billion that we had to spend in economic recovery for that, or Sandy up in the Northeast, if we knew that these storms and their costs were associated with our behavior, and we could make a preliminary investment in making sure that our carbon footprint was reduced enough to limit the extremity of those storms, would we not save more money on the backside of having to recover, and the cost of life and the cost of destruction and the cost of all of the things that go along with these weather events that are fundamentally altering our way of life?
Wow. What you just described, I guess, was kind of a global climate change Remy model or something. I mean, that.
Well?
I mean, you're asking for one heck of a leap of faith, you know? I mean, so you've got the federal government and this administration and the Department of Energy has decided that they're going to allocate capital. Mm-hmm. And when they make
We're talking about stimulus dollars? Is that we're talking about?
I'm talking about actual investments. I'm talking about loans that are made that the government bears the complete risk of the fall.
Are you talking about those and treating them the same as the coal and natural gas subsidies as well?
Well, look, this administration didn't come in and begin the coal and natural gas subsidies.
No.
Have they ended them?
I think that the rhetoric has been there too in them, but you have to have Congress enact that ending. So
To what extent
Congress is participating in the ending of the coal and natural gas subsidies, you'd have to ask the lobbyists of the coal and natural gas industry in Washington on K Street.
How was it that he was able to do the seed funding or the subsidization of or the unlimited loan capacity? Is that stimulus money that the Department of Energy has been partitioning out ever since stimulus was passed?
I don't claim to be an expert on federal distribution of resources.
Right.
But I do believe that there was some direct allocation of capital in the stimulus package.
So it's my point. So my point is that we have a situation at the federal level where the administration has determined that the right way forward economically, or for all kinds, could be environmentally, economically, it could be national security issue, that they have decided that they were going to take a significant amount of money, I mean billions and billions and billions of dollars, and they were going to either directly just place it with privately held companies, publicly traded companies, or they were going to, the textbook example is the Solyndra case, right? So they lend them $578 million, which they default on. The list is long of the things that didn't turn out well. The challenge with when you give money to a company like First Solar, which is still around, is you have no idea if that money made a difference. I mean, you can't measure if that changed things.
I can measure. So if you want to talk, because it's hard for us, you and I, to talk about federal policy and the president's plan. If you want to talk about Proposition C and the subsidies that we provide for the solar rebate here in the state of Missouri.
Three senators on the floor. Senator from the 15th, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. Would you lay this bill on the informal calendar?
The bill shall be placed on the informal calendar with the adoption of the substitute pending. Senator from Newton.
Thank you, Mr. President. No further business coming before the body. I move the Senate stand in recess until 7:45 this evening to allow the freshman senators to go to dinner with the governor.
Heard the motion from the senator from Newton. All in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye. Those opposed, nay. Eyes appear to have it. Eyes do have it. The Senate shall stand in recess till 7:45 p.m. this day.